Here we go. Here we go. Okay. Good evening, everybody. We're continuing, finishing up chapter 6. In the Hebrew book, we're on page Kuf Mem Aleph, bottom of the paragraph. In the English book, an easy number, page 111. The peace is as great as the calming of desire. And this is kind of a summary and conclusion of this very important chapter of dealing with one's wantings. And then we should finish it quickly, and start another interesting section about thoughts. So it should be very interesting. Okay. L'sikumum shalvarm. So to conclude our words, the inner power, inner strength within the soul of a person is his wantings. And if he can succeed in repairing the point of that root, meaning to say, and he can control himself not to have these unnecessary desires in life, and these unnecessary wantings, so all the blemishes that a person has in life will fall away automatically. He will go into the real world of pleasure that one would want. Next page in the Hebrew, Kufman Beis. A person is not biased by that inner point of wanting. In other words, if he hasn't touched this point and hasn't dealt with this point of wanting, then he's building a life on an improper source. If his life is that of wanting things, then everything you build on that root will not be good. And therefore, the one's service in life will be very hard. In other words, if you don't deal with this overall issue of not wanting so much, then this physical wanting will create so many desires and so many drives. The person has to keep struggling with them, and you just run out of strength fighting all these drives and desires. So if you can once and for all just inherently realize this is not in my best interest to want so many things and get over that, then you can move on with life and then you can develop things in a reasonable way. But if you don't deal with this issue and there's always wantings, it's going to be a struggle forever. All the destruction that we see in this world, it's because people have these wantings. Every place you go, there's people who have their wantings. He's borrowing a phrase from the Talmud. And just like the structure, just like their faces are different one from another, so are their ideas different one from another? And so is their wantings different one from another? Anashim rotzim lios chevrei knesset. There's people who want to be in the Israeli Knesset. Kama machloikis umarivos yesh machrei ratzon. Look at all the arguments and fights that comes from that wanting. Im kol osam meos alpayim ha'mavatlis ha'ratzon. If all those hundreds or thousands would give up their wantings, shalom v'shalva ha'yabayim v'alvino. There'd be peace in the country. It's when all these people want to be the politicians. And in brackets, besides the millions of shkolim that we would save, if we wouldn't have that either. We live in a world where everybody has some grasp of his wantings. There are those who have private individual wantings. Therefore, they do less damage to others. But when those wantings are global wantings, general, bigger wantings. You want to be the prime minister. You want to be the mayor. You want to be on the city council. Hashem should have mercy upon all the people he will trample on the way to the top. To get to the top, you got to trample on a lot of people. So everybody has their own little kingship that they're looking to develop. Big kingship or a little kingship. In your little kingdom, in your own house. And you know, it could be as simple as this. You could have one spouse, you figure you got a Sunday, and one spouse, you know, he'd like to go to the ball game, let's say. He wants to go to the ball game on Sunday. You just think about it, since Matzah Shabbos, since Matzah Avdol, you know, I want to go to the game tomorrow. You know, I'll take the boys, we'll have a boys' day out, we'll go to the game, it'll be nice to go to the game. And then the wife says, you know, dear, I was really thinking we would go visit my parents. So, and now the conflict of ritzonos begins. Now the wanting battle begins. The wife really wants to go to her parents. The husband really wants to go to the ball game. Right? So now that's going to be a major problem. Now, even if one gives in to the other, let's say for the sake of argument, the husband gives in to the wife, as long as this commercial comes into mind, there's a commercial for Blizzak snow tires. So the wife says, oh dear, just great news. My mother, she bought these Blizzak snow tires. So the guy says, so that means she can come in, you know, from 2 hours away. She can come in, right? Yeah, she can come in when it's really, really nasty weather. Yeah, I mean, even when it's pouring and iciness. Yeah, she can come in every weekend. Yeah. So why was that good news? You know, so the husband, you know, may not really want to go visit her parents. Right? And even if he gives in, he isn't so happy, but he has to give up his ratzon. So there's always that kind of, you owe me one. It's like, you know, I spoiled my Sunday for you. Right? So here's the point. So is there anything wrong with planning your day? There's nothing wrong with planning your day. There's a big difference between planning your day and making a ratzon out of it. I don't want to say, well, I think it might be a good idea to go to the ball game today. But it's not like you have your heart on going to that game. And it's not like it has to be. Well, you didn't have any, there were no other plans. So you go, okay, I'll go with the boys, we'll go to a game. And you can certainly plan things in your life. But it isn't set in stone as a need. So what's the difference? The difference is you can give it away easily. That's the difference. And that, we're trying to get to this point where, because I'm afraid of something, so I can't want anything in life? So let's change that. You could plan things. Nothing wrong with planning things, as long as you don't want them. As long as you don't have to have them. So you can plan a lot of things in life. You have to move on in life. You live in this world, so okay, I plan to do this, I plan to do that. But once it becomes a rut zone, it's something that I have to have, then already the person becomes, as we've said before, it means I'm lacking something without it. And now you're taking it away from me, so that will make the person unhappy. And that's where all the conflict in life comes. Because you have a rut zone, and you have a rut zone, so what's gonna happen? So it's better not to have the rut zone to begin with. It could be a tentative plan. But it's not that my life, you know, begins and ends by being able to go to the ball game or going to my in-laws. And that is the real, that's what he means to say. It would stop so much argument, so much destruction. Because, you know, when you don't get what you want, because let's say the guy really wanted to go to the game. Now he's not going to the game. So what's he thinking all the way, you know, they're driving an hour up north to her parents. What is he thinking the whole hour? He says, I'm not going to have a good time today because I was going to have a good time because I wanted to go to the game. And now that I'm not going to the game, I'm not going to have a good time. And I'm going to blame my in-laws on it and my wife because she always gets her way. That's what he's thinking, right? And then he'll set off certain vibes that the wife will be picking up and she'll be saying, what's wrong with you? How come you can't be cheery on the way? You know, if you can't be happy, then who needs you coming to my mother's house? He says, well, listen, you got your way. It's easy for you to say that. And, you know, chad gadya. So it keeps going around. If on the other hand, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter if you want to go to your in-laws. Fine. I was planning this. It's not the end of the world. It's okay. I don't feel am I not going to the game doesn't mean I'm missing anything. And that's been the theme he's been saying the whole chapter. If you want something so badly, that means life is not good without it. And now that is, and so now I'm worried and I have anxiety. If I don't get what I want, then things are going to be terrible. And now the person who is conflicting with you, because that person now is threatening my desires to come to reality, now becomes some kind of a rival in one context or another. And that's what he's talking about, the destructions that are going on over here. Kol ha'chaim kan, heim churban achad gomur. All life in this world is one complete destruction. Machmas shekol echad yesh lo ratzon, because everybody has his wanting. And he directs his life, he navigates his life according to the wantings that he wants. He builds for himself an individual wanting. And he wants to arrange the whole world around his wantings. Everything has to fit into my wantings. You know? Let's say you want to have peace and quiet in the house today. So you're going to make sure that comes your way, no matter what it takes. No matter who I have to step on, no matter who I have to yell at, because I want peace and quiet this Sunday. Right? So then the grandchildren come over to make noise. I said I wanted peace and quiet, right? So you're going to make sure to get your way. So that's the whole problem. You want the whole world to go around your wantings. So guess what? Most of the world will not go around your wantings. And that's where the problems begin. Ela she'echad rotza mashu, but rather somebody wants this. Asheni rotza hafach, the other guy wants the opposite. V'chan matchila ha'milchemes ba'olam. And that's how wars start in the world. Kol milchemes olam shehoyu, amahein hoyu. All the wars of the world, what were they over? What were the wars really fought over? Right? Im b'nei adam hayu ovdim al bitul haratzon. If people would work on nullifying this wantings, okay, I don't agree with this line. Afil milchama achas al haisvon. There wouldn't be one war in this world. So I don't know about that, because I don't think you know, a lot of the world wanted so much, you know, cause World War II as opposed to one person who wanted to start World War II. But I think a lot of wars would. I agree. Most wars, I think, would have been stopping, because they're usually over something. Yeah, he wanted to. I understand. So what? So nobody else. Yeah. So we shouldn't have had any wars. We just should have laid down our arms and let him take over the world. So obviously, the free world had to fight against him. Okay. So you could say, had he not wanted to take over the whole world, there wouldn't be a war. Okay. Fine. But once he wants to already, there's not much you could do. So, but that's where all the wars come from. So what is the complete repair to the whole world? Not just the private individual's world. You have to reveal a world in which you really don't want anything. What does it say in the prophecy of Isaiah? When the Mashiach will come, it says, Ve'gar ze'ev im keves. The wolf will live with the sheep. The wolf will live with the sheep. Madua, why? Because if the wolf doesn't want, the sheep can live next to him. And he won't swallow him up. What's the problem? Why can't the sheep live with the wolf? Because the wolf wants to eat the calf. But if he doesn't want, then they can live together. Now Rambam tells us all allegorical. Does it really mean when Mashiach comes, you're going to find wolves dancing on top of sheep? Maybe. But the wolf represents the non-Jews of the world, says the Rambam. And who's the sheep? Represents the Jewish people. So the Jews will be able to live with the non-Jews. The non-Jews aren't gonna want so much. What's the whole problem with the war in the Middle East? It's one thing. The Arabs want the Jews dead. That's the only problem. If you get rid of that problem, it wouldn't have any problems, right? Yes. In Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, the animals were all subdued to man. They all were very gentle creatures. Once man sinned, and what did he sin? Because he had ritzonos, he had desires, he wanted things. Then the animals developed their own ritzonos, their own wantings. And then the wolf wants to eat the sheep and things like that. When Mashiach comes, then man will give up his wantings and the animals will give up their wantings. And it could taco be that the wolf will live peacefully with the sheep, because that will reflect how the civilized world is going to be civilized. Alright, so Kolzman, Sheshon, Ritzonos, as long as we have those desires, be mechila, with all due respect, Anach Mazavin, we're just a bunch of wolves. That's all we are, a bunch of wolves. Kol Echa Tarvis Hasheni Kan. Everybody rips apart the next person. And this is really what Darwin's whole idea of survival of the fittest was all about. It's all based on wanting to fulfill your desires. There's animal evolution, there's social Darwinism, all these things. It's all based on the same thing. We live in a world that man just can't survive in. Hakol shlit, everything's power. Hakol kach, everything's force. Hakol mechamas, everything's wars. Mi yodea ma ha'olam omed la'avor od. Who knows what the world will still yet undergo because of this unlimited wantings. V'chli maspik masha avarnu, isn't it enough that we've gone through all the sufferings? V'kol mipnit ma, and what's it all for? V'chli ritzona shal anashim bodedim shemach masam echkriv yichatzom, because of certain individuals who, because of them, they've destroyed half the world. Hadam sover, a person thinks, shim yich boshchatz yoylem, if a person thinks, if I conquer half the world, I'll be king of the world. Let's say, for example, Nasi Artis Abris. I'll be president of the United States. Right? I told you this morning you're going to get it. Hu yia hamu shabadam. If I be the president, I'd be the happiest man in the world. That's what people think. So says the author. Ani mazminas Nasi Artis Abris l'galos ha'imu adam usha. I invite the president to my house, and I want to ask him, does he feel he's such a happy guy? Harei hulo nirdam balayla rav dalgas. He doesn't sleep at night because of all the worries he has. Haskarim olim or haskarim yardim. The poles are either up or the poles are down. Tia mechama lo tia mechama. Is there going to be a war? Is there not going to be a war? Imeis le mechama. Should I take people into war? Ze yichazek es hamameid haklol olamish lo. If I go to war, will this affect my international standings? Or not? Will I still get the Nobel Prize? Or not? He says in the brackets, how many people die? He couldn't care less. Who call us man chai b'chashas u'b'chai, but he's always living with concerns and he's nervous. You think the president has a tranquil life? Does he have a tranquil life? You know, and what's the new language they speak now, the presidents? What's the new language they speak? What legacy does he leave behind? Now let's translate into good mamaloshin. What does it mean? Did he leave a legacy? So translate into simple English. English means, how much covet will I get after I die? How much honor will I get when I'm dead? That's pshat, a legacy. What was Bush's legacy? What was Clinton's legacy? Okay. But what are these guys like? What's this legacy business? This is whole bigger than life. It's like, you know, oh, we'll always remember him for what? What do you remember Clinton for besides that one Misa? Right? What's there to remember him for? What was so great? What was so great about Bush? What was so great about all these guys? It just doesn't. It's so foolish, you know. Nasi Artzos Abris, the President of the United States, Mamad Rav Olami, he's got such a powerful position. Haim Sham HaOsher, Sham HaTanag, is that where the happiness is? Is that where the pleasure is? It's not there. I mean, you know, this morning we were learning in the Navi class. I'll just say it briefly because Yehuda's heard it already. That's the problem. She learns so much. I can't rarely double up my teaching because she knows everything I'm teaching. So there's a story where there was in the times of the judges. This is a couple hundred years after the Jews entered the land of Canaan, before they built the temple. So there were different judges who ruled, and there was a nice fellow by the name of Gilad, of Gidon, who saved many Jews from the oppressive enemies of the Jews. And he did such a good job, he was quiet for quite a while. Anyway, to make a long story short, he had many children. He had 70 children. Okay, that's when he retired from public office. He had a lot of free time. So he had 70 children, and he had one other child from a concubine in a different part of the town. He died a good old age, fine. So what happened? Then the next generation comes. So the son of the concubine, whose name was Avimelech, which means my father's the ruler, one day he wanted to figure he would take over. So what does he do? He hires a bunch of hooliganers, and they go and kill the 70 brothers. That's effectively, you know, reducing all the challenges that are. So one escaped. Yosam, he escaped. And he sneaks into to where Avimelech lives, and from a mountain he screams out a parable. So he says the following parable. He says, the trees wanted to make a king over themselves. So they first went to the olive tree and asked him if he would be the king over them. So the olive tree says, have I ceased to give beautiful oil that gives honor to God and to mankind that I should seek to be the king? So I'm not interested. And then they went to the figs and asked the fig, will you be the king over us? He says, have I stopped to give sweetness to the world that I should want to be the king? And then they go to the vine, to the grapes. So will you be the king? He says, have I ceased giving such luscious wine that gives God and mankind such happiness? I'm not interested. So who do they go? They go to the thorn bush. And goes to the thorn bush and says, will you be the king over us? He says, if you want to be the king over me, if you're serious, you're not mocking me, then you will rest under my shade. And if not, I will come and burn all of you up. So what was the analogy? What was the idea? So the Malbim commentary, which was written a couple of hundred years ago, he said, basically, what do you see from this story? That people who really have a good life are not interested in being president. I'm not interested in being kings. Because they are doing so much already for the world. The olive is analogous to the spiritual leader. The spiritual leader, the scholar, the Torah scholar. Because we know that oil brings light, and light is Torah. And he says, have I stopped teaching Torah? Do I not have enough Torah that I can't teach the people? That I have to be involved in being the king? I have to waste my time with all the narishkeit of being the king when I can still keep teaching Torah? The fig represents physical prosperity. The very wealthy businessman who says, listen, I'm doing a lot, but I'm a very happy man. I'm making a lot of money. I got all these things. What do I need? What do I need to be the king for that? And then finally, the vine, that's the person who's good in both areas. He's spiritually good and he's okay financially. And he gives a lot of benefits for people. He says, why should I give that up too? So what do you see? In other words, they have what to make themselves happy. They're happy with what they can contribute. So why would anybody want to be the king? But who is the thorn bush? Because the thorn bush is a nobody. He's a nobody. So he says, oh, you want to make it? See, he would entertain that idea because he has no life anyway. He has no life anyway. So he says, if you want me to be your ruler, you'll have to go under my shade. You'll have to make yourself lower than me. You'll have to bend down lower to me to give me some self-esteem. What do we know about the thorn bush? It's very prickly, very prickly. So, you know, keep everybody at distance. And that way, I'm an important guy because nobody can get to me. And if not, I'll burn you all up. So, you know, and that was what he was trying to tell Avimelech. He was saying, listen, you're a no good for nothing. And because you're a no good for nothing, that's why you feel you need to have more and more. And they want to destroy everybody. So it's a tremendous lesson about leadership. And that the mom is saying, many people's drive for leadership is because they really don't have anything that they appreciate that they have in life. If you really look, nobody in their right mind wants to be the president. Who in their right mind is, they pay enough money to get the guy to be president. And they get the president to make laws to do what's good for them. So what do they have to worry about the whole world? They just want one thing. Can I still get my tax breaks? Can I still make more money? Fine. I'll give $10 million. Make sure he's the president. I sleep well at night. I go on my Caribbean cruises. I got all this. And the president makes laws that are very good for me. And that's it. But the president has no life. Doesn't like. And we think he's the most, you know, yeah, he's a slave. He's mamish a slave. He's got every minute of the day. He has to see this ambassador and that ambassador and this ambassador and this and that and that. He's got no life. He's got no life. It looks good. And people think it's an amazing thing. But really, he has no pleasure in life. And what happened, I will tell you right now. He lives and dies by the polls. What's the worst thing politicians, they live by what everybody else wants. So they can't even do what they want anyway. Even what's good for the country they can never do. And then just get blamed for everything. You notice how Bush looked at his inauguration? And then how did he look 8 years later? More than 8 years. You know, every single one of them. You know, they don't come out looking younger. Right? Even though they have a better lifestyle. You know, they get manicured every day. They get the finest of foods, everything, but it's the headaches and all this. It's crazy. So that's all it is. The person who wants to be president has huge desires. And therefore, these things don't really make them happy. Don't make them happy. Yes, ma'am. Listen, those are spiritual desires. Those are things for the soul. That's all right. It depends if you want it for a soulful purpose. But even that, you can't be hung up on it either. If God, what if God does not want to give you children? He doesn't want to give you children. You can't be miserable over it. Even spiritual things. You want to be a big scholar and it's not going. You know, you're trying your best and, you know, you're plowing your way through, but it ain't going. So you have to be happy with that amount that God is allowing you to have.
But doesn't typically one sign that Hashem, in certain areas, Hashem wants that ratzon?
He wants us to want it. Of course he wants to want it, but if we don't get it, we won't be unhappy.
But we're supposed to want it because it's the ratzon Hashem.
Yeah, it's what Hashem wants. But if Hashem doesn't want to make me smart, who am I going to argue with him? Who am I going to argue with him? Can't argue with him. You could ask and keep asking.
It's like we were learning on Shabbat this morning with Rabbi Tauber, that he says that the wanting will make us shoot, you know, in the next world.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, but you can't be depressed if you're not successful in that area. That's the point. You got to realize that even in spiritual ways, that's the Yetzer can fool you. And even you want good spiritual things, but maybe you're overshooting your mark. And God says, I'm glad you want that, but you know, it's not cut out for you. And that shouldn't make you depressed either. It's a big problem in yeshiva bachrim. They go to yeshiva and they don't hit the top. Now from the highest echelon, they get all depressed. They shouldn't be depressed. If you're happy with what they have, it's also have to be happy that you're having spiritually. Yes, Ben. You got a few weeks pent up in there.
No. But the reality is most desires are tough. We teach our children desires. We want nachas. We want
shiloh. Oh, man, our first one. Whoa!
Do this.
Whoa! Where did you get that? Where'd you get that first one from?
So you create a whole world of desire for your own kubo, the parent.
Well, they don't know how to be parents. That's not a good parent. Never the first rule, Ben, as a parent, never get into parenting for nachas.
You ain't gonna get it.
No, that's not what you're in there for. That's not what being a parent is.
I understand that, but if you look at where does most desires come from, they are either in learned behavior or refused kind of behavior.
I agree, and that's terrible parents.
So that
they don't mean to be terrible. They don't mean to be terrible. Listen, parents teach their children a lot of terrible things. You know, and that's just the way life is. Now, there's some parents who teach good things, too. Remember that parents, I think parents really trying their best, but they're misguided.
What
other people are telling them to do. You're not following what the Torah tells you to do. You're going to make big mistakes. So, yeah, so you're right. So what? The parents have to learn to not teach for themselves to be better people, so don't transfer it to their children.
So you come to a point of a dilemma, don't you? Because if that is the bulk of the way society teaches its children, you end up with a product of people with nothing but desires.
Okay, so this book is trying to teach the parents to stop it.
So all of a sudden, you know, it's like an ingrained pattern of behavior. It doesn't stop overnight. Because you read the book.
That's why we've already been spending since June.
Yeah.
And we'll probably spend another 50 years working on this. You know, it's a process that takes a long time. Again, this learning is not, anybody's looking for this quick fixes, you know, go to Dr. Brown, you know, go to where, you know what I'm saying? Go to Dr. Bernstein, like, you know what I'm saying? Spirituality doesn't work quick. It's something we gotta talk about, it's gotta get into our heads, gotta soak in, you gotta discuss it, you gotta struggle with it. This is going to take time. We're trying to unlearn incorrect perceptions of reality. That's what this whole book's all about. So it takes time.
But is that process also subject to the kind of corruption that he's talking about? The search for spirituality. I've got to get spirituality. I got to do this.
A person wants to have a purpose in life, right? Yeah. Your purpose in life is to get close to God. That's what God gave us a life for. to accomplish what he wants us to get done in life. So you're trying your best. That's what you want. That is the only thing, as Lutzado says, is a thing that a person should be looking for in life. Everything in life is to get you to that goal, and that's the goal that God wants you to have. Right? So, and those things will make you a person who doesn't have that much wanting in life. You only want one thing, as it says in front of the Aron HaKodesh, Vani keres Elokim litov, and for me being close to God is good. That's all that I'm interested in. Everything else is not important. Other things in life can get me there. Having children can get me to be close to Him. Having a spouse can get me to be close to God. But that's the goal. So whatever's going to get me close to God, I'm happy. And those are usually not expensive things. And those aren't things that are conflicting with other people either. The husband who allows the wife to go to the parents is doing it because that will get him to be close to God. Right? That will get him to be close to God. So he doesn't feel like he's missing anything. So that's the answer. Okay, let's finish up this chapter. Back to the president. If before he became the president and before he started his whole campaign, if he just changed the diskette of life, pull out the diskette of wanting and put in a different diskette. He says, you know what, I don't want to be the president. Imagine if Obama decided not to be the president. Where would he be today? He'd be somewhere on a beach at the Atlantic, very calm and rested. Right? Resting at his vacation retreat. And he wouldn't have all these headaches of being the president. But the world is built on one system of desires. That's what drives the whole world and brings all the destructions. Okay. Dibarnu harbi al tikkun hargashos al adam. We spoke a lot about repairing these feelings of mankind. Ala izan anochem, with the right balance. Sa'adnu kama v'kama tzom. We took many steps. Ati ganon l'kuna p'timus yosher. Now, at this chapter, we've come to the deepest point, which is, Aide bitl ritzon asav, mitakeinu adam es kol oilom hargashos alo. By nullifying these wantings, he repairs his entire world of feelings. That's what we've been talking about. We talked about actions before, now I'm talking about feelings. You want to have feelings that come from the soul or feelings that come from the body. Most of the wantings are feelings that come from the body, and those are things that are taking away from the treasure of feeling your soul. Once you stop wanting all those things, then you can come back to appreciating the treasure that you have of your soul. When you have that, you got everything. You can have plants. You can have plants, but you don't have wantings. To totally get rid of these wantings. First, he can bring himself to a place that his situation of wantings has been silenced. To the degree he can silence those wantings, to that degree, he will have tranquility in life. Imadam wrote a covet. If a person, for example, wants honor, if he doesn't get it, boy, is he boiling angry. You could have a guy in shul who expects to get the third aliyah, which is a prominent aliyah. Baruch Hashem, and our shul people don't fight over it, because they're about shuls. They don't know how important those aliyahs are. If they knew, you know, they're happy with anything. But in some shuls, it's a big deal. It's a big deal, you know. Can you imagine one guy, he's the richest guy in the shul, he says, you know, I want shlishi this week. Another guy goes to the gabbai. He says, listen, I have a yortzeit this week. If it's available, I'd like shlishi. And if not, not. So then the gabbai goes to the rich guy. He says, you know, this guy would like shlishi. What? He wants shlishi? Who's he to want shlishi? Tell him to bug off. I've been thinking about shlishi all morning. So the gabbai goes back and he says, you know, the other guy doesn't want you to get shlishi. It's fine, no problem. I'll take a different aliyah. It's no big deal. So he had a plan, but it wasn't set in stone. So who's the winner there? Who's the winner? The rich guy got the shlishi, right? Now he's cooking the whole Shabbos. He gets home, he says, Rachaleya, can you imagine? Shmerel there, he thought he was going to get the shlishi aliyah. The chutzpah, he's a nothing, he's a nobody. And the guy's blood pressure's going, you got the shlishi already, what's your problem? He's got to tell 50 people, Shmerel thought he could get shlishi, a chutzpah. And he gets more upset every minute, thinking, Shmuel said, if it's available, I'll take it. If not, not. Forget about it. It's not a big deal. Right? Quite often, when you win and you get what you want, you're more upset.
Right.
You're more upset because you wanted it. And the guy who didn't want it, he said, listen, if it's available, fine. If it's not available, it's also good. You give me something else. Give me the fifth aliyah. Give me Hagbah, please. If I don't get anything, it's also okay. Because it's supposed to be an honor for my father for me to get an aliyah. Okay, if the shul sees it's too busy and too crowded, my father will be okay also. That's the whole difference. That's the whole destructions that come. Aval Adam Shemei Rosh Omer. But if the guy says, Tas li tova, do me a favor. Lo mechapes akava shocham. I'm not looking for your honor. I'm not looking for honor. Don't worry about it. Hare shechayim for guim yourself. He has such a peaceful life. It's such a peaceful life. It says, nothing is such a big deal. If a person will really grab and understand the root of all the problems in our lives. Notes Bekashu writes, it's because you want. If you get rid of that point of wanting, he can get to the depths of his soul. He can get to the true tranquility in life. Okay, I know it sounds simple, but obviously this takes a lot of work. Okay, we got about another 20 minutes, so we're going to start. It's always odd when this would be a good breaking point, but we've got 20 minutes, so we got to just jump into the next point now. So we've dealt with action, and we've dealt with feelings. And remember, the whole point of the book, we're trying to separate what are the real actions that are us, and that is our garment, what are the real feelings that are us, and that is the garment. So now we're going to go to the most tricky point of all, and this is the last section. Remember, we talked about Havdalah and Hachno, trying to subjugate and separate. Then we're going to come back to reuniting and sweetening. We're going to get back to all that. So we got to separate, what's us and what's real and what's not real. What we accomplished in the last chapter, all those things we want, that's not really who we are. It's all the garment wanting that. That's not us. Right? We don't really have such big wants. The soul, I got enough. What do I need anything else? I got a soul. But that's all in the feelings. But there's still a very important thing that comes before the feelings, and that's the thoughts. And now he's going to spend a whole chapter in dealing with how to discriminate between our thoughts. And that's next chapter, page Kuf Mem Dalid, and in the English it's page 114. So let's just do the first little section to get a jump in here. He says, Ba'olam bo anu chayim, in the world we're living. Now, let me maybe just preface and say one thing. Many of us feel, maybe at this point in the game, that you're telling me to be able to clean up my actions? Maybe. Clean up my feelings? Maybe. But to clean up my thoughts? That's impossible. To make myself think like a soul? But the truth is, as we'll go through this chapter, if we can't clean out our thoughts, it's going to be very hard to clean out our actions and our feelings, because what really drives the whole mechanism is the thoughts. So he's been talking about ways to deal with the actions. Remember we said if you did certain things that were bad, you say, that's not my neshama, that's the garment that's doing, that's not me, I shouldn't have such a negative self-esteem. And the feelings that of what I really have is an unbelievable soul, and that should make me feel great. And the fact that I'm not a great businessman, that shouldn't make me feel terrible about myself. That's all wonderful, but it all really goes back to the most important point, and that's the thoughts. And now we got to begin to start discriminating thoughts. And he says something just truly amazing, as we'll see very shortly. Okay, now back inside. In the world we live in, it's clear to everybody. We know there are certain things in the world that are good things and are bad things. Even though that's becoming less clear as time goes on. Adam Roiland, again, ain't of masim chayuv mode. He sees some beautiful positive things. Yeshem anoshim shoysi masim flame mode. He sees people doing wondrously, amazingly good things. Moshim chayem luzulasim chayuv mode. They devote themselves to others, dedicate their lives. Yeshem anoshim shirachmanu l'slan masim ha'epach ha'gomer. Then there's people, God forbid, they're the opposite. Terrorists, people cheat in business, all the 95% of the news you hear about. Right? Adam Raya said, a person sees these things, Makarai said he recognizes them, and then he thinks about them. Hachelek hara hanimtza b'machshavta shel adam, the part in the person that thinks about bad things, where does it come from? It's a part that comes from what a person sees. Yodei, he knows, umaker, and recognizes. Masim shlilim shekayim ba'olim, negative things that happen in the world. Hein bavar, either in the past or in the present. Hein besviva krov elav, whether it's in the environment that's close to him, like his family, let's say. Hein besviva yosercha, or the broader world. Hein b'cholim kol, the whole world. Adam moda b'machshav, the person is conscious. La'uvda sheyesh namasim tovim yesh gam masim ram. You know there's good things and bad things in the world. Okay, that's the first point. Zula says, show me that besides what a person knows, but he thinks about it. Let's say a person sees a certain activity. A bad thing that was in the world. And you can't separate yourself from what you saw. You saw it, you heard about it, you read in the news. It's on your mind. He thinks about it. He reflects on it. Even if you don't think too much about it, the action gets engraved in his brain deep. Let's say the whole world's talking about the tiger. Okay, at their mamish, it's the whole talk. It's like, it's all over the place. Right? If you don't know what's going on, you're a lucky person. But if anybody has any connection to the media, that's been the number one, he's lucky that at least Christmas is coming, so it'll take a little bit of the edge. You know, you got all the college football games gone, so it'll take a little bit off. But it's unbelievable. So now here's the issue. This is going to take a lot. You're going to fight me a lot on this one. You're going to fight the author on this. Is this a positive thing to follow this news item or not? Should you be reading it? Of course, you would never think to do what Tiger did, right? First of all, probably couldn't afford to do what Tiger does. But you wouldn't think of doing it, right? So he says, L'chayra ma baya pakach. What's the problem? What's the problem when you think about bad things? And we're not talking about things you plan on doing. We just, you hear about it. So he says three things. Number one, ubechein, race call. Number one, hadam saivul mikach. You have to tolerate a lot. It's a heavy load to carry. It hurts. You suffer. You suffer to hear about these things. People who are more sensitive, you see things that aren't proper. You have like a recoiling, an abhorrence, an inner abhorrence. It's disgusting. I can't stand listening to such a thing. He looked like such a nice guy. He was like nice, he looked as nice as OJ looked. Right? Remember OJ in his heyday in the I think it was the 60s. No, he used to play for USC, right? Right. They called him the Juice, right? And you hear what else? It's terrible. So now, this is the next great black hope was Tiger Woods, to show the whole world that we're civilized and this and all these things. You know? It's painful. It's painful to even read about such a thing, right? You see things that aren't proper, right? You recoil. Number one, it hurts. Hurts is easy. You read about Madoff. It hurts. Hurts these things. It's terrible. You see Nebuch, whatever, a terrorist blows up a little baby. It's terrible. Or you hear, somebody's dying from a dreaded disease. It hurts. That's the least of the problems, but that's not to be minimized. That'd be a great way to start. Like, I don't understand why anybody would listen to the news on the way to work. You want to come depressed to work already? I don't get it. Two, Zula said, besides this, Kasher Adam Choshev, it's very interesting when you think about negative things, Zalula Hashpiel Arala Nefesh Shalom, it can ultimately influence your mind, your soul. If Tiger did it, I'm not much better than Tiger. Right? He's such a good guy. He looks nice. Nice, normal guy. So then you begin to think, maybe it's not so impossible. You see a negative thing, but you have two reactions when something negative comes. We're on the topic of Memhei. Oh, Slita Mukhlet, it's either total recoiling, And he goes to the other side. He says, ugh, this is terrible. I want to know about him. I don't want to hear about it. I'm out of here. On the other hand, he learns what he sees. And probably the third is the more accurate one. The reaction could be mixed. A combination. On one hand, he's very recoiling from it. It's disgusting. But what did he do? How did he do? What? That's what he did? Really? Interesting. How did he think he could get away with that? Whatever. He said, I want to know a little bit more. But slowly he begins to realize the thing is true. And he slowly, eventually loses the abhorrence and slowly becomes acceptable. Right? What is the simple example of that? Is people who are fairly secular Jews, but they don't want their kids to intermarry. Right? And you hear your son is coming back with, Georgina, and it says, well, what's this? You bring a shiks in the house? It's terrible. I don't want to hear it. But then as time passes, this is my only son. It's my only grandchildren. She looks like a nice girl. A lot better than some other Jewish girls aren't so good. She started to get used to it. So slowly, being around an environment that's not good, that which, as much as you're going, it's a terrible thing, but if somebody could do it, and I'm a somebody too, maybe one day, slowly, the first time there's abhorrence, but slowly when most of the world does these things, I guess it's normal. And that's why people love Clinton so much, because now that he said it, if he can do it, anybody can do it. And then everything is fine. And slowly. So that's the second problem. Since you can say a story with the Satmarov. Satmarov was a real, real holy man. He was a real holy chassid, like unbelievable. So he was once in Europe. He was invited to a reception of the King of Hungary. So you can't say no to the King of Hungary. You've got to go to the reception. You think he cares to go to a reception, King of Hungary? Okay, they put him up at the dais. He's the rabbiner, right? So he's up there, he's sitting pleasantly. Instead of making speeches, you think he's listening to his speeches, he's going over all his gemara in his head. And he's politely smiling, like this, But he's thinking of all his Talmud. He's not even listening to nothing. That's fine. He can live with all that, Okay, and I gotta appreciate who this is. It's a tzaddik. This mamash a tzaddik. You know what kind of tzaddik he was? That when he was 3 years old, his father would call people in when he was asleep and said, I want to show you. So the father put his hand over the mezuzah of the bedroom, and all of a sudden he starts to wake up. That's the kind of holy person he was, Or if he put a little thing in his ear, and he's asleep, he wouldn't put his hand in his ear. He'd take the blanket and go like that. I mean, this was a really holy person, okay? So I'm just giving you the example to appreciate the next part now. So anyway, all of a sudden they bring up a mixed choir to sing. Okay, now, for a religious Jew, you don't listen to mixed choir singing, you don't listen to women singing. I don't want to get into the reasons, that's the law. Whatever. The Talmud says you can't listen to a female vocalist, whatever. So it's a mixed choir. And it's, and like instinctively, the Rebbe, like it's a right, the Rebbe's right, let me get out of here. But he had two of his gabbais next to him, and they're going, sit, Rebbe, you want to get your head chopped off? You can't walk out on the king's ceremony over here. So the gabbais hold him down, and he puts his fingers in his ear the whole time. He can't listen to this. Okay, anyway, after he finished, he said, you take me to the mikveh. He says, what I just saw, it was terrible. Yeah, he went right to the mikveh and he took off his clothes and says, get me a fresh pair of clothes. I can't wear those clothes anymore. And what am I trying to say? He was spiritually sensitive. That's what I'm saying. Okay, you think he's crazy. You say, what's so wrong with that and all these things? But I'm just bringing this story as an example. If you're sensitive to certain things, you just can't accept it. And we think everything's okay. Everything's fine. It's not a problem. Everything's good. And that you don't realize how things wear away at us and break down our standards slowly. So the things that we said were crazy 20 years ago, right? Same-sex marriage is disgusting. It's terrible. It's bizarre. You're crazy. No, it's normal. What happened? What happened to the world? Well, he wears you down. Just wears you down. So the tzaddik doesn't let himself get worn down. He instantly reacts. So that's number two. But that's all not the most important as the next one, number three. And we're just going to start it here. Now there's a third problem, which is much deeper. The Divrei Rabbeinu Ramban, Nachmanides, tells us the following, a very important rule. And the next time we meet, we're going to talk about this a lot. Sheheichan, you should remember this. Sheheichan shemachshavto shela adam nintzeis. Where a person finds his thoughts, shamu nimtza, that's where he is. That's where you really are. The Zohar says the word adam, man, stands for the following three words. Adam deihu machshava. Man, he is what he thinks. Man is his thoughts. There was a Greek philosopher, right? Who said, I think, therefore I am. Or whatever, French guy, well, a Goyish philosopher. I think, therefore I am. Here it is, I think that's where I am, is what the Tzar is saying. So what does that mean? So, for example, one time Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, he's davening in shul, and a yid's davening in shul. So Rav Levi Yitzchak comes after him after davening, says, Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Welcome back, the Jew who came from Leipzig. He says, Rebbe, what are you talking about? I was here the whole time. I haven't been in Leipzig in weeks. He says, you know, you were thinking of Leipzig during Shmon Esrei. The whole Shmon Esrei, you're thinking of being in Leipzig. In other words, that's where you really were. And that is a very astounding thing. And he's boning ma'at ma'tomam b'divrum and niflamim. Let's think a little bit what's buried in these words. Where you think is where you are. Okay? L'dugma, for example. Adam nimtza karega b'Tel Aviv. Let's say a person is physically in Tel Aviv. But he's thinking about what's going on in Yerushalayim or Haifa. So when he's thinking about what's going on in Yerushalayim or Haifa, we ask him, where are you? He would say, I'm in Tel Aviv. So this Ramban comes to reveal, no, that's not where you are. You're not in Tel Aviv. That's, he's not in Tel Aviv. The holy books call thought a bird that flies. It's a flying bird. Because it can fly from place to place. And that's your thoughts. In his body, he can be in one place, but in his thoughts, he can be somewhere else. Totally in another world. So a person thinks, even though I think about another place, but I'm not there. I'm only thinking. But I'm really here. Let's explain why this is not true. We already discussed so many times, right? A person is a combination of body and soul. Haguf yisoda chomer, the body is based in physicality, yisoda offer from the ground, but the neshama really manifests itself in the thinking of a man, where the soul manifests itself properly in the way we think. That's not where the soul is, that's where it manifests and where we think. So let's think about that. So kesher ha'adam margish, shuguf u'basol neshama, a person thinks he's a body, and in the body there happens to be a soul, he identifies his location with his body. Therefore, he defines, when my body is in Tel Aviv, and I think about Yerushalayim, and even in Tel Aviv, I'm in Tel Aviv. Because it identifies with the body. Therefore, he identifies his location where his body is. Because he really thinks he's a body. But when he comes to the real truth, it's the opposite. He really is a soul that happens to have a garment of a body. So you know where he really is? He really is where he thinks. Because that's where the real person is, the neshama. And the neshama is manifest mostly in where what you're thinking. And that's where you're putting your neshama, where you're thinking. When Mela comes out, if he finds himself in Tel Aviv, he's thinking about Yerushalayim, The real I, Nimsa Yerushalayim, is where he's thinking, Yerushalayim. For Akufa Nimsa Tel Aviv, and only his body is in Tel Aviv. You know, they tell one of the Lubavitcher Rebbes, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbes, was once told by a great rabbi that one of the Lubavitcher Rebbes, when he was a very little boy, he liked to look out the window and see what was going on in the streets of Lubavitch. I mean, I can't imagine that much was going on. But he was looking out, he was in the house looking outside. So this older rabbi came over to him and said, I don't know why you do this. It's better for you to stand in the street and look inside than to sit in the house and look outside. Because if you're sitting in the house and looking outside, then you're outside. And outside it's dreary and cold. But if you're looking, you're standing outside, you're looking inside. Inside is warm. And then you feel a lot warmer than if you're looking at and standing outside. But this has such fantastic ramifications. Because, as we'll see, you know, what makes us unhappy a lot of times is where we find ourselves physically. It's where we find ourselves physically. And we have such a power to be released from these things. How is it that people who were in jail were able to thrive and survive? Because their minds were somewhere else, in much more powerful places, and they were much more real places. And therefore, they went through certain physical pains in life. The physical pains are only to the body. But that, now if you think you're only a body, then my whole life is terrible. But if you are where you, what you think, and you're thinking, so for example, when we're davening, there's a halacha, when you're davening, we face east. Why do we face east? So you should think you're facing the Beis HaMikdash. See, even though you're in Toronto, who says you can't be in the Beis HaMikdash? If you're thinking about the Western Wall, then that's where you are. And that's where you are. And your davening could be a lot better, wouldn't it? If you were right there. If I'm just over here by this wall on the Zara Drive, it's not very inspiring. But if you can, in your mind, conjure up, I am where the Beis HaMikdash is. And only that, as a matter of fact, I'd like to go back in time. I'd like to go back in time when there was a temple. And I'm putting myself right where the temple is. Then that's where you really are. And there's all kinds of halachic ramifications. But obviously, we're beginning to see how this could make you a much happier person. Because what really drives everything, what drives the actions, what drives the emotions, is all what you're thinking. And that you really, at the end of the day, you have a lot of control of what you're thinking. And if we can organize a lot of positive thinking, that's not just, pop jargon, pop psychology jargon, fooling people into forgetting about their troubles. No, the truth is that's what really is going on. Because what you think is really what you are. And therefore, if you're thinking the right thoughts, and we're not talking about daydreaming, we're not talking about fantasizing, we're talking about real things. So think about real things, then those things can often be very pleasant. On the other hand, the real problem is, so what's happening if you're thinking about the disgusting news? Then where are you? You're in the middle of that disgusting stuff. And that's where you're putting yourself. And that's what we're gonna really talk a lot about when we resume. Okay, so it's something to think about. What? So again, so there's no class for the next 2 weeks, but it's really 3 weeks because we always meet after a week anyway. Even if we don't cancel a class, we don't meet for a week. So we will reconvene the first, and we're switching nights to Wednesday night. Tuesday night, there's gonna be a Parsha class by a guest rabbi who'll be giving a class every Tuesday night. You wanna hear the Parsha at 8 o'clock at a more reasonable hour? And I'm Wednesday nights. Okay. All right. So if we'll send out reminders. So the first Wednesday in January, whatever it is. I think the Monday is the 4th. Yeah. So the 6th. All right. January 6th, 7:30. Okay. Okay. Have a good vacation or whatever. Break. Yes. You know what? That's such a good point you're saying. Think about what you're saying. Let me say, when you're on vacation, why do most people not enjoy their vacations? Because what's spoiled? As soon as you're there, saying, oh, when I come back, I'll be there. And that wrecks the whole vacation. Right?
going to go home and I'm going to move to Hebron.